morning and welcome to Shattered Lives, everyone. This is Donna R. Gore, a.k.a. Lady Justice, and we at Shattered Lives are so excited to welcome you to this unique show, taking you beyond the details of the crime and the perpetrator and getting to the heart of what crime victim families experience and what they need in the aftermath of the crime. Prior to each show, please go to www.donnagore.com or imaginepublicity.com to read the background of the case or organization featured the week before our show is aired. And please don't forget, in case you can't listen live from 5 to 6 p.m. Eastern, you can always listen at any time via our archival feature. And about 24 hours after our show goes on air, you go to Blog Talk Radio Inside Lens Group, and the graphic is a big red heart with cracks. And in about 24 hours after that, we do a podcast and a written blog, and you're all set to go and to listen repeatedly and pass it on. So I welcome you. I welcome you this evening, and this is Donna R. Gore, a.k.a. Lady Justice, and I'd like for you to be a little patient with me. Hey, Dottie, can you hang on 1 second? I'm doing the board. This is Donna R. Gore, Lady Justice, and unfortunately, our substitute person who was going to do the switchboard this evening fell ill, so I'm trying to handle everything. So my apologies if I mess up a little bit, but I'll try to do my best. So good evening, and I'll welcome my two very esteemed guests in just a couple of minutes. I'd like to make a couple of announcements, and I'd like to say, unfortunately, my co-host, Delilah Jones, is sitting vigil with Susan Murphy Milano, who we think is very close to passing over to the other side, and I want to say that our prayers and our love go out to both of them as we all deal with this horrendous ordeal, and we just wish Susan a pain-free passing, and we're thinking of her with much love. And thank you, Kim Colton, for volunteering for this. So we're going to do our good work, as always, because Susan and Delilah would want it that way. And just to give you a couple of brief announcements, I'd like to plug Susan's virtual book tour. There's a variety of contributors to this wonderful book tour on imaginepublicity.com. Each and every day, there are either radio shows featured or wonderful written blogs where people promote her memoir that has recently come out, October 3rd, Holding My Hand Through Hell. So I do want you to go to Imagine Publicity and look at that, as well as go to the publisher, IceCubePress.com. And I have to let you know that even if Susan may not be with us very much longer, her medical debt remains, and we want to continue the momentum with regard to people donating, whether Ice Cube Press is donating 10% of all the proceeds for her book, as well as we have an online auction, we have the caring site, and a multitude of things. So please do go to Imagine Publicity, go to conqueringcancer.me, et cetera. And just a little bit about me. I have a precedent-setting blog that I had just done regarding a state Supreme Court case where a severely disabled woman was actually raped by her caretaker in the state of Connecticut. Made a reversal to that ruling, and the convicted rapist actually was set free. And this is unconscionable, and we have to stop such things. So please do visit my website. I have bookings through this next February for this show, which is very exciting. And I want to reach out to all my friends in South Carolina. I'm building collaborative efforts with them. I'd love to do some projects with them. And so please do get in touch with me or Delilah with regard to that. And I will be visiting South Carolina again next month. So with that, I say I am very I am very honored to have two guests this evening that are just stellar advocates for the topic of human trafficking. One is Patty Laster, who is the founder of Laster Global Consulting, who has worked with law enforcement agencies across the country, educating and training officers. She is also involved in an upcoming documentary and has worked with several television and film companies. And she's also developed her own line of jewelry with one of the young women who she has taken under her wing as a mentor to try to help. And it's just a myriad of things. If you read the article that she that was featured in More magazine, I was just in awe. So I say we have to have Patty Laster for president. Who needs Obama or Met? And Betty Lubion. She should either be president or vice president. Betty Lubion is she works globally with community and economic development. She's currently a resident in South Carolina, and she was very instrumental in creating us and successfully lobbying for stiffer legislation and penalties in human trafficking within that state. And that is a very tall order, I have to tell you. And just very recently, hot off the press yesterday, she coordinated a very important training in Colombia with trauma-informed care with respect to people knowing more about human trafficking. So, Daddy and Betty, I say thank you so much. Welcome to my show. It's a pleasure to have you this evening.
Oh, thank you, Donna.
Well, thank you. It's good to be here.
Yes, well, it's good to be here with both of you. And I just want to say there's so many topics here that we could get into, and I know the hour will just fly by. And I'm more or less going to – I have some working knowledge, but, again, you two are the experts. So I thought we might start out, and, you know, whoever would like to take it, because although we have a sophisticated audience, we always have new listeners, and I think a lot of people – have a lot of myths regarding human trafficking, and they just think it's regarding prostitution, and it's so much more complex than that. So either one of you, if you would like to perhaps maybe for the first 10 minutes or so, let's do a little bit of primer with regard to what actually human trafficking encompasses, and then maybe we can get into more specific topics and hot topics after that. Okay, ladies?
That's fine, Dottie. I refer to you.
Okay, well, we're going to just go to Dottie. Oh, by the way, Dottie's in Texas as well. I failed to mention that. So welcome all the Texas listeners as well and beyond. So, Dottie, if you'd like to take that, that would be wonderful.
Well, great. Well, human trafficking is anyone who's held in service of another through force, fraud, or coercion. And the coercion can be psychological coercion. It can be threats. It can be, feigned love. So there's many different forms that coercion comes through. It's also any minor, anyone under 18, who's in commercial sex. And commercial sex is stripping, pornography, or prostitution. So anytime anything of value, not even money, but something of value, is exchanged for a sex act, you have commercial sex. And any minor in commercial sex would therefore be a victim without needing to prove force, fraud, or coercion. And the law also holds responsible everyone involved in the trafficking. So anyone who harbors, maintains, obtains, transports, or in any way facilitates the trafficking of another person, they are criminally and civilly liable for the victim. So an example is, it used to be that you had to have a gun to your head and a ball and chain on the victim to prove they were enslaved. Now all it takes is the scheme or pattern. I don't say all, because I think I should rephrase that, because I think it's even more involved. The scheme, pattern, or plan that keeps someone held in service of another. So imagine if you have a gun to your head, all you've got to do is escape the gun and then you're free. Well, the law recognized that the psychological coercion was stronger than a gun to the head and very effective because it went with that victim everywhere he or she goes, even in a police station. The coercion is still there. They're never safe until you remove that coercion. So anyone who's under 14 that's a victim of sex trafficking, anyone that helps that scheme, pattern, or plan can face up to life in prison. So the law in 2000 that was passed, the Trafficking Victims Protection Act, protected the victims, recognized the victims in a more encompassing way, and stiffened penalties for anyone participating in trafficking.
Wow. Well, how many people have actually gotten prosecuted with respect to that law and getting that kind of a sentence?
Well, and that's so abysmal because I just saw a press release from the Department of Justice claiming that 100 prosecutions have occurred, and that's a 12-year-old law. So 100 prosecutions from 2000 until now, 2012. And that's ridiculous. I have 50 cases myself right now.
They really haven't kept track of any of these particular prosecutions or even cases and so forth, or they just aren't stating the full picture. One thing that Polaris Project, the national organization providing technical assistance, also now working with victims of human trafficking, as well as staffing the national hotline and so forth, they recognized that it was a problem and a few years ago started to keep track of the tips and any results that they could get. So they've kept pretty good statistics, but it is abysmal, as Dottie says.
But it's not being kept track of across the board, correct? It's only, you know, pockets of, you know, certain people are trying to address this.
Well,
certainly the prosecutions don't match the number of cases that are there.
Okay.
Yeah, and you have a big gap between the law enforcement and the judicial court prosecutors versus what victim service providers are seeing. And so it is a major gap. And then the number of tips that are coming in, well, how many are actually resulting in anything, including rescues? So it's very difficult. I did look further into it and inquired from the there is a police unit under FBI, a police unit of human trafficking, and they're supposedly the ones that centralize all statistics on human trafficking. So I called, and it's one person.
One
so
person.
Far.
Yeah,
this is a billion, right?
And she was looking. I could hear her leafing through a book when I inquired about the statistics specific to South Carolina.
Yeah.
And because I thought I was having a problem, doesn't anybody track it state by state? Because I did see that in Georgia, for Atlanta, FBI stood up at a press conference and told how many cases they had been handling for that year. And she had a terrible difficulty. She just suddenly said, oh, and she said, well, I really can't say.
Now, Dottie, would that be a typical response then? You know, people just don't have a grasp. And well, I wonder if either of you could also address, what is the biggest misconception with regard to what's going on in human trafficking right now?
It doesn't
exist.
Well,
one misconception. Assumption is that movement is required, and that's not the case. Because of the name, it implies movement, but again, it's back to the definition, anyone held in service of another. And so that's the first myth. Another myth that I come across quite a bit is you'll see a lot of information in groups talking about human trafficking and you know, quote, you know, doing awareness and education, and those are great. We need those things. But again, it does not match or isn't, you know, the number of places and people that are directly helping victims and working to disrupt traffickers is abysmal compared to the energy that's out there and the funding that's out there.
Yes, and so there's still a great disbelief that it exists, at least here in the U.S., that it doesn't exist. And two, people still have in their mind that it involves just those other countries and people from those
right.
other countries. But in fact, domestic trafficking of of Americans by Americans and so forth. I think we're going to see more and more, Dottie, don't you? It seems to be either it's always been there, but either the numbers have been there, and so it's not necessarily increasing. It's that we're finding out more and more cases. Dottie's, yes.
Yeah, I agree. And I've seen over the last 9 months more cases of non-marginalized U.S. citizens. So just in my experience, what I'm seeing is that they were going after the easy targets, such as runaways or displaced children or disrupted families. Now I'm seeing targeted upper middle income, two-parent households, great, you know, students doing good in school and achieving, which would not normally be an easy target, yet they are still going after them and still getting them. And so I think that the crime has grown exponentially.
Wow.
While it's been unchecked, obviously it's low risk if you've only got 100 prosecutions, and they're growing to where they're not just looking at easy targets anymore.
So exactly. why are they changing their demographic to, you know, others? Is it harder to get the ones that used to be the easy targets? Is that it?
No, I think it's grown so exponentially that they're meeting all targets. It is literally on every corner and every place in the United States. I live in a town of 48,000, and I found 6 cases here, and I honestly do my best not to look where I live so I can have some safe place to rest.
Oh,
and
God.
That's a town of 48,000 that you would never think this was a place for trafficking.
And just around here, I mean, this is a place for trafficking. As we know, we're in a great area of hospitality, resort, as well as agriculture and military. And those are great attractions to trafficking.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm noticing that I'm even – somebody started talking about something, and they overheard me mentioning human trafficking to a friend of mine in a store, and the person just suddenly turned around and said, "I think I need help. I think my neighbor, this," and blah, 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 blah. And I've had about 3 or 4 people just out in the public
come up to you and say that.
Come
well,
up to
Betty.
Me and wondering if it's domestic violence or if it's human trafficking.
Okay.
Well, so,
yeah,
I don't
know.
It's
ridiculous the number of 100 prosecutions is.
It's ridiculous.
You know, it shows you that's how ridiculous it is.
Oh, yeah.
Well, we have
now,
a prosecutor in our
make...
area.
Yeah, go ahead.
I was going to say, we have a prosecutor in our area. He still, although we now have the law in South Carolina, it did get passed, and it's a wonderful law. It's full and comprehensive, and he's going to have to prosecute it. He is still saying publicly that there are no cases of human trafficking as far as he's concerned in our area.
Well, then how is that workable? Yeah, that's just incredible. I want you to be able to tell us about the process and how you got the legislation passed, but I'm just wondering, how do you make the distinction for the public out there that is thinking, well, is this domestic violence or is this trafficking? Is there a way to tell either, ladies? Or is it both?
Well, again, go back to the law. Is someone being held in service of another for force, fraud, or coercion for the purposes of forced labor or commercial sex? So there must be some labor or service component.
Okay.
And from that, there must be force, fraud, or psychological coercion. So sometimes traffic cases present as domestic violence cases, and a lot of times the way I rescue victims, if they've reached out for help but they can't leave on their own, as I will call police and ask them to keep the peace while someone leaves an abusive situation.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, in the beginning, that is a good way that police understand what to do and how to respond. I quite, in my experience, it does not work out well to call and say, "I have a trafficking case, and can you help us?" Because it won't. I mean, just the misunderstanding.
It won't go anywhere.
Prosecutors like the one that Betty's talking about won't want to get involved. So I find that a lot of times it's easier to rescue someone saying they're leaving an abusive situation, and they are. That's very true.
Right.
And then once we get them safe, you can go further and find out, you know, what it was. Wow.
I'm also starting to go around to in my area where I live, and I'm going to encourage some of my colleagues who have been trained in human trafficking to do the same, is I'm meeting with the police chiefs and just talking about human trafficking and mentioning one or two possible situations in their jurisdiction. And some that have been really sharp, they have brought in their detectives and other people to meet me and talk with me. And starting to really look into it and paying attention to it. And that's going to help on that other end. If anybody does call and say, I need help, I'm being trafficked, they wouldn't quite say it like that. Or an intermediary calls and says right. to the police department, I think there's a trafficking situation here, and blah, 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 blah. So mm-hmm. it's, and I know that Dottie has trained a lot of law enforcement at all levels, and so she really knows how to connect with law enforcement. So it's, you know, what you said, Dottie, is very true, and that's very important to know.
Well, thank you. And two other things I want to point out, dovetailing what Betty said, is we have a map called Global Incident Map. So anyone can go to globalincidentmap.com and click on human trafficking. And that will show incidents in their area, so you can keep a live feed going of what's going on in your area. And then the other thing we did is train 911 callers, and I think that's a really good target so that they have indicators and red flags so they can, you know, that's the beginning of a case, and however a case starts determines the life it's going to take. Mm-hmm. And I always try to get human trafficking mentioned somewhere along the way so that it gets put to a detective rather than just put with a, you know, quick response. And you know, we do those patrol guys respond. We want that. But depending on somewhere in that chain, if human trafficking gets written down, it's more likely to get kicked to an investigator that understands trafficking.
So exactly. can you kind of circumvent the system when you call in and get a detective right away, or does it have to go through, you know, a number of layers until you get that person or whatever that may pay attention?
Well, in an urgent case, you would call and get a patrol response. However, if you can start seeing human trafficking from the beginning, it's more likely to get kicked up to a detective. It'll be written. And that's why we train those 911 callers, you know, the call takers, because then they were ones that could write down those indicators and get it written on the first initial documentation of the case. And so rather than relying on victims to do all the work, I've been trying to spread areas where, you know, there's a safety net where other people can do some of the work to help get them identified.
Exactly. Wow. I also encourage if somebody calls the 911, definitely do that first, because that's the emergency and you need to have the situation addressed right away. But then I ask them to also call the national hotline, because they are also, we've provided them names of the service providers as well as law enforcement in the areas around our state. So they already have those telephone numbers and those people to call, and they'll give it a case number. That way we also have the human trafficking imprinted on that case, and we have a case number, so we have starting an audit trail of the case.
Oh, wow. Yes, and then you can refer to that case number perpetually if you're having to get back.
If we have
you don't
to do that.
Recreate
yeah, and you
wheel.
Will have to follow up. I want people to understand just calling the hotline has nothing to do with law enforcement. You will need to keep following up.
Oh, yeah. You do need to, but they
it's only a tracking
we have
system,
them.
So that's one thing that people should know. It's not going to solve the case, but it begins a trail and a tracking.
Right.
Now, who advocates for the – I mean, Dottie, I'd like for us at some point soon for you to talk about your personal mission and the women that you have mentored, because it's so compelling. I loved the article that I read about it. But in the normal scheme of things, if you want to report a situation that isn't quite right, and what do you have to know up front to be able to say, okay, I'm going to try to advocate for this person, but it's not enough just to report to a tracking system? This is something that is a long haul kind of a situation, correct?
Yes, it is. And I want to thank Mimi Schwartz, the writer who wrote the story in More Magazine. It's out in this October's issue. It'll be on stands just a few more days.
And when I mentioned it yesterday at our training, and I saw everybody write it down.
Oh, wonderful.
Beautiful.
It was just very, very compelling. And like I said, I was just in awe reading it this past week. And I said, wow, this is wonderful. She really captured the essence. And what I wanted to say about both of you, and I found this very interesting, and maybe you could, you know, you have commonalities, of course. But in terms of when you first started out, though, you were on a different track. I mean, Dottie, you were trying to get your degrees, and you heard this topic, and you had a vision, and you identified this is my mission. And Betty, here you were working, you know, in community and economic development, doing your thing as consultant, whatever, and you decided to make the ultimate sacrifice and give up your business for X number of months, whatever it may be. I don't know
years.
The exact time when you did this.
A few years.
Yeah. I mean, you know, luckily you have a husband there, and you have an income, so maybe you have that flexibility where someone that's single maybe could not. But what I'm saying is you both decided to jump on this, and you found this as a personal vision where it wasn't something, you know, do you think this just kind of fell into your lap and you said, yes, this is my mission? And I just find this so impressive.
Well, thank you. And if you did, I knew the instant I heard about it what I would do. And I just got a real flash of what the future would be. And honestly, I didn't have the ability to know how great it would be. It's for all the frustrations, it's given back much, much more. And, you know, in that story, it talks about Precious. And I literally first met her in 2004, and I continue mm-hmm. to help her to this day. And so, yeah, it's always been something since I knew of it that I mm-hmm. would do fully. And I find if you're on mission, you can achieve so much with such
right.
less effort and such less exhaustion than if you're not on your mission. And so it's been like I got wings and just from that moment on sailed. The other thing is that I became very good at what I do because of helping the victims. There were so many places they were let down, should have been helped, laws were not used that were there to protect them, that it took me to my dream of practicing law. I had applied to law school and did not get in twice, so I'd kind of given up on that dream. And I actually can practice immigration law the same as any attorney through recognition from the Department of Justice.
Mm-hmm.
And who knew that was even possible, much less that I would actually do it and excel at it. I have so far been successful in every case that I've taken.
Well, does that mean there's more than one way to skin a cat?
Yes, there is.
Oh, yes.
Yeah,
right, in many ways.
What is
I
that? There
so.
Are more roads that you know of to take to Rome to get to Rome or whatever it is.
That's right.
Yes.
And Betty in South Carolina, and I certainly don't mean to make fun of South Carolina because it could be my future
don't.
Residence. But, you know, it could be my future residence, so I don't want to be too harsh on them. But I'm just saying you have very much of a challenge there, too. I'm in Connecticut, and we're very progressive here. And like you say, you gave the example of the prosecutor there. How did you come to this point where you decided to, you know, sacrifice what you were doing and do what you're doing now, much, you know, in a different kind of way than Dottie, of course, but you both are doing, you know, wonderful work. So I just want you to, you know, tell our listeners a little bit about how you achieved the legislation that was passed. There and maybe a little bit about the training that went on yesterday.
Well, you're right. South Carolina really presented quite a hurdle, and yet it didn't. I've had a background in politics and legislature, but it was from another state, and this state presented a whole new set of ways to get there. We were talking about the different paths. This one is certainly one. So the last 3 years, 3.5 years or so, we've been working on it, And there was a representative from the legislature who really took it on, and he had taken his granddaughter to see the film Taken, and mm-hmm. he was actually ridiculed by his peers, and also asked, how could you take a young girl to see something like that, and it doesn't exist, and he stood his ground. So he was introduced to me, and I asked him if he would introduce some legislator. He said yes, and I handed him the bill, the draft of the bill. And from there, it sort of went. So, but it really took off about the middle of last year when we were asked to move into a review session to make the bill conform to South Carolina laws, terms, and conditions. And then we introduced a twin bill into the Senate, and around lobby day to end human trafficking in South Carolina on January 24th of this year, 50 advocates came and met with their legislators, and the Senate did introduce the twin bill, and we had a lot of coverage, and it seemed very magical that day. I knew then that everything had shifted. After that, nobody asked about statistics. It started moving forward very, very fast, and it was finally signed and ratified and all of that on July 18th. That is a very special day. We did not plan it that way. We didn't know that it would happen on that date, but it will become effective 180 days after that, which means December 18th, very soon, which happens to be the same date that the U.S. Constitution, the 13th Amendment, to the U.S. Constitution was announced as effective back in 1850.
Wow, that's
3, 5, 4.
That's spooky.
And so it's very auspicious. It was exactly on the same date.
Yeah.
In addition, we beat the 150-year proclamation, emancipation of January 1st. So mm-hmm. it's very for South Carolina, which actually started the Civil War. All of this is very meaningful. It's almost as if a whole new era is going to open. Now the work begins, the real work,
right.
And that was yesterday's training was on human trafficking and trauma-informed care. And it included participants came from law enforcement, social work, various advocates, all different kinds, law enforcement and veterans and so forth. And it was an extremely full day. It went from learning about human trafficking, a good refresher on that, as well as about trauma-informed care by Drs. Pip and Whitaker from USC and Dr. Michael De Ariano from MUSC Victim Center. It's a National Victim Center.
Yeah,
and then
we had
a survivor. Two survivors were going to share their experiences. Unfortunately, one, as we know with human trafficking, every day is a new day. And that's exactly what happened. She is a leader as a survivor, a leader, and is working with victims of human trafficking. And some of them she needed to help yesterday and couldn't come. But the other one was there, Keisha Head. Out of Atlanta, and she was just fabulous. So the dialogue, it really engaged everybody. I couldn't believe they all really stayed awake and alert and engaged, and they asked for more.
Wow. Well, there's hope then. There's hope then, Betty. I'll be down there to help you soon.
Okay.
That is great. Dottie, if you had your druthers with respect to, you know, if we're making a wish list, and I know the first big thing is creating this awareness, which you're doing with your presentations in law enforcement and whatever other types of venues you can get. And I know that funding is always a problem, but creating the awareness is the first thing. And once you get that, or maybe simultaneously, what are the next steps that you see where people can begin to understand this, have a greater grasp of it, whether it be people in the judicial system, you know, people in law enforcement, or just the public in general, because I think it's very nebulous. And so what would you create as a hierarchy, Dottie?
Well, I think what I would also do, or, you know, I'm always kind of ahead because I've done this for so long, but what I'm seeing now is that this is a direct attack on the families, and I don't know that people are recognizing that yet. And an example is that a group that does that researches prostitution, prostitutionresearch.com, did a study, and they were trying to study men who buy sex versus men who don't, and they could not find 100 men who had not bought sex for a control group. So they had to settle on for their control, meaning the group that was the one that was not being studied, to find 100 men who hadn't bought sex in a month. And I'm telling women, you need to protect your family, your home, your boyfriends, husbands. They are or may have been participating in this. And a lady that I've worked with has been married 37 years, did not know her husband had ever been unfaithful. She came home from a business trip one day. He'd moved out of the house and filed for divorce. She found out he had actually bought outright the prostitute he'd been seeing, a Thai prostituted woman, and had left her for this woman. Oh. And she is now dying of an STD-related cancer due to his activities.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm telling women, even if you're married, practice safe sex. Even if you think you're in a committed relationship, go back to Reagan where he said, trust but verify, trust but verify. I cannot tell you how many people this is affecting and how many men it takes to promote a $9.5 billion industry, if even more than that. There's also a group, prostitutionharms.com. I would suggest visiting them. It's called pornographyharms.com.
Pornographyharms.
Pornography is the gateway to this, and the people in pornography are not willing. You'll see the young lady in the story, Lizbeth. She was trafficked for pornography and stripping. And I'm holding her hand through, like Susan Murphy Milano's title, I'm literally holding her hand through hell. And she's been rescued for more than 2 years, and she is still suffering horribly. And yet, everywhere we go, men prey upon her. She's actually at a mental hospital now where a worker from the hospital has had sex with her. There is no place in society that is safe for this woman. Mm-hmm. No place. Absolutely no place can I take her or place her that this isn't going to continue to happen.
You
and
mean
so
other than your home, right?
Yeah.
Didn't you take her into your home?
I did. And in my home, she was safe, but then everywhere we went, people would be calling and emailing her online. I mean, literally, at 3 a.m., there's somebody trying to get a hold of her that we had met earlier that day. And I wrote him back, you know, immediately and told him he was inappropriate. I can't tell you. We could do a whole show on all the things that have happened to her. And unfair. It's
and what,
so,
what makes
the situation
worse?
Now?
What makes...
Oh, I'm sorry, sorry, go ahead.
Oh, sorry, sorry. I was going to say what makes it worse is such as the encounter I had in a very small town here in South Carolina. Gave a talk to a church group of a lot of women. As it turned out, there was a wonderful young woman in it, and she was a victim. She had been sold by her mother. She's still living with her mother. She lives in a small town. She has no place to go. Fortunately, she's being mentored by two of the women at the church, and they are trying to turn the public around. People whom she grew up with, the older people in that, everybody blames her. They still do. It's hard for her to keep a job. It's hard for her to make a normal life.
Right.
They can't. After the sex, after the worker in the hospital had sex with her, she was isolated for 14 days. I fought like hell to get her out. He was fired but is walking around free. He's married, has a kid that's under six months old. Has everything in the world to be thankful for.
Yeah.
Look what he did. Another doctor that had treated her earlier proposed marriage in a series of emails 2 years later after we had written him saying, thank you for saving her. She's doing great now. And, of course, that sent her in a spiral downward. That was the one man who hadn't propositioned her. There literally is no safe place for them, and we need to fix that. And then also the women or significant others that we are with may be contributing, and that, you know, is the woman I told you about. That is a danger to her. She has never been unfaithful to her husband, and now she's dying of an STD.
Wow.
Wow. Daddy, it's just, you know, epidemic proportions, like Susan would say about intimate partner violence.
It's pandemic. It's pandemic.
Pandemic.
And as I started this, remember I told you they're going to easy, they're not using easy targets now, they're going to hard targets. That is proof of how exponential it is. We're looking at a place in Houston that does $200,000 a week. Who is paying 160 bucks at a time that makes up $200,000? I mean, how many men does it take?
Wow.
I'm going to mention a good book to read. It's the only one that I know of, Dottie and Donna, that is about the Johns, and that's the aim of it. The Johns by Victor Malarek, M-A-L-A-R-E-K, and it's called The Johns, Sex for Sale and the Men Who Buy It.
It's a very good read and very enlightening, and the dialogue with them is actually one of the more painful things I've read. I mean, I've read a lot of painful things. And when you hear them talk about the victims and the women and their wives, they sound like middle school kids who just saw their first National Geographic. I mean, they are so ridiculous in their responses about sex and about women. And those attitudes carry out into society. So just because they're doing this in secret doesn't mean their attitudes don't carry towards their mothers, their wives, their sisters. And I've gotten through the victims' eyes to be able to spot them now, to spot them out in public. And they treat women differently after they've treated them as objects. It infects society.
How long does it take after they actually take someone in and they groom them and, you know, make all these promises and do this and so, do they move on to another person like in a month, or does it depend on the situation? I'm thinking of the Berlin Turnpike, Ray Bouchard from Connecticut, who wrote a stellar book, and he was on my show several weeks ago and talking about this, and that's another show that I would like people to go back into the archives and listen to, because I think he's also, you know, an authority in his own right. And is there a particular time frame, or does it just depend upon the woman and the situation at hand?
Okay, if it's a ring, they'll trade them up. They move them around because buyers don't want to see the same face. They want new faces. Also, for major events, sporting events, et cetera, different traffickers will call one another, and they'll sell one. They'll ask for more from another trafficker, so they basically trade and barter.
Mm-hmm.
Now, on a domestic, if you get one person who's trafficking one victim or two victims, they might. We have one in particular where he had one victim, and she got pregnant once or twice. She was like 12, 13, 14. She got pregnant once or twice, got abortions and that, and she was getting worn out for him, and he just couldn't keep up with it, so he kicked her out. And he took another. He took, well, she was about 10 when he picked up the next one.
Wow.
So
and
that's
I
a one-on-one.
I would say they often move to friends and sisters. I'm working with a family out of California, and their daughter, who was accomplished in school, music, I mean, excelled dramatically in everything, and they got a trafficking ring, got a hold of her, and the first thing I warned the family is don't ever let your younger daughter alone with her or anyone around her. And sure enough, like days later, they were pressing hard for the little girl to spend the night with them and things like that. So they will often target friends and younger siblings. And they will use, I mean, there's never enough. They're constantly scanning, roving, and grooming to keep this demand met. And if you think about the demand, it's unmeetable. No matter where you are in the United States, you can sell sex on every corner 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And sex is marketed to men. It's made, you know, all the commercial sex, the stripping, the porn, and the prostitution. Very, very tiny, if any, is marketed to women. And the women don't necessarily buy sex on demand from nameless people. We're wired different. We do very bad things ourselves, but we don't do that. We do it different. So if you can't sell sell it to women, and you really can't even give it to them, how do you meet the demand with a supply that's not willing, that's not programmed for this? You must use the force, fraud, and coercion, and that's how they're meeting this insatiable demand. And so it makes sense that it's going to continue to grow exponentially until the demand is attacked and the people that buy sex are humiliated and punished. And if you think about Elliot Spitzer buying sex, and it was clear in the indictments that he had violated the Mann Act, but he was never charged with it. In fact, he has a TV show. If you look at Lawrence Taylor, he pled guilty to a misdemeanor while having sex with a 16-year-old. That is always illegal in every state. Sex with a minor, you don't fail that test. It doesn't matter what she said. It's always illegal. But because money was exchanged with a pimp, somehow it's a misdemeanor. So we have to demand accountability for this. Women, this is our job. It needs to be out of our house, out of our homes, away from our loved ones. And we need to demand that anyone engaging in this is treated as mentally ill as they did my adoptive daughter.
Right.
I mean, just think about it. She's locked up and treated as mentally ill for disclosing what happened, but he goes home to his wife. We need to turn that around. The mentally ill people are the ones that have everything in the world to be thankful for and willingly and with all control in their mind and create this image of what they want, and they engage in the crime.
Like you say, it's all backwards. But Dottie, when you were talking about, you know, what happened with her with respect to 2 years later someone contacting her, is it reasonable to say, okay, because of, you know, what's going on in your life, you cannot communicate with anyone by phone, by email? In other words, maybe it's punishing her, but the access, you know, you can't have a website, you can't go online, you can't have a cell phone. If you remove those electronic devices, does that somehow, you know, kind of stem the
tide
at all?
That's what traffickers do. Traffickers remove everything.
They become the traffickers. And she's isolated already socially. She's already isolated. How can you expect her to isolate further?
And also the laws, a lot of the laws for victim fees and to pay service providers and people so they aren't going under and so forth, it says it's required, one, a police incident report. Well, that's not going to happen. And two, it requires non-movement. And then so many cases, the traffickers, they don't pay attention to the state lines and so forth. They use them.
Right.
So it's problematic all the way around.
I read the email with her. This was not an unsafe thing to do, what she did. She didn't do anything unsafe.
Okay.
I read the email with her to a professional with her. We both wrote it.
I see. And then that professional was the one in the hospital that ultimately had sex with her?
No, totally two separate incidents. Two separate hospitals, two separate incidents.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry, I got to confused.
As I said, there's no safe place for this young woman. There is, not because she's acting out, because society praises, rewards, you know, encourages this. The second guy's big deal is he wanted to have sex with a porn star.
Oh, boy. Well,
what I was about to say, and sort of lost my thought on it, Dottie and Donna, is the documentation. A lot of the laws in order to receive fees to help the victims and so forth, it requires documentation. So besides telephones being taken away and anything else from the victims, also their documents. So they don't have documentation. They become undocumented people.
Mm-hmm. Right. No IDs, no social security numbers, nothing, right?
Basically, it's a business.
Right.
And the product is the victim.
Yes, absolutely.
And if the victim
wears
out and can't be sold, and the traffickers can't find a niche market for that victim, they'll kill her or throw her out in the middle of nowhere, all beaten up, and she'll die, or she'll get diseased or whatever.
Or locked up or put in a mental institution.
Exactly.
Well, it just sounds to me like, you know, what you're trying to do is, you know, you're doing your efforts, and it's a teacup, you know, pouring into the ocean or something. I don't know. What is it that really needs to happen from each of your perspectives? So we have about nine and a half minutes or so of the show, so I'm gonna let you address whatever it is that you want to do. I know, Betty, you wanted to talk about maybe a couple of organizations that you'd like people to know about. But what is it that you need to do, and what is it that the public needs to do or law enforcement needs to do at this juncture in time to make things better over time?
Well, I'm going to let Dottie wrap it up. Just say that this is about a business, and that means we have to take the money out of it. If you suck the money out of it, there's not going to be trafficking, and that goes to the heart of demand, as Dottie was talking about. So we do need to reduce the demand. The buyers have got to be held responsible, accountable, and put in jail and whatever else heavily. And as well as we have to stop thinking of prostitutes that they have a choice to be prostitutes, that this is a choice career. It isn't, and most of them don't, and they aren't. So if we start with the premise that prostitutes are victims, then we can begin offering different things and reduce that. And it is working, such as with the Rose Project in Phoenix, Arizona. And on the demand side, the John schools are working as well as some others. The state of Washington is now introducing a law that will be based on the Swedish model that actually criminalizes the buyer, the John side of it, the demand side of it, and decriminalizes the supply side. So a lot of these are coming forward. They are trending up in that way. There's another part of it is that trauma-informed care for victim service providers is being introduced, where the victim, the individual's experience is not an event. It is an experience. And we have to stop asking what is wrong with this person and ask what has happened to this person and put the choice and empowerment in the victim's hands so she's a survivor and that's an experience that can lead to leading. As far as groups are concerned, Seroptivus International is very, very strong. Salvation Army, very strong. The United, on church-based, United Methodists have made it a top priority across the U.S. And Zonta International has been involved for several years. It has filtered into all the clubs. Certainly very strong in Florida, very strong in Georgia, and we're picking it up here in South Carolina to be very strong in that area. There are other many, many other organizations, and it just takes a unified force, everybody in sync, and that means law enforcement, government agencies, not-for-profits. And that's where I work. Dottie works, she's down more in the trenches as well as working in my area, that level of putting people together and so forth. And I get offshoots of that. I've worked with victims, I've worked with families of victims more than the victims themselves, and that's a whole other thing. So,
we'll have to do another show on those aspects. Yeah. There's so much.
So Dottie?
and where does the funding come from too for these very good endeavors? I know it's a struggle.
Funding?
Dottie, you need to
did she say something like funding, Dottie?
Yeah.
You need to be paid for your work. You need to be paid. We all need to be paid for what we do, but you know we do it from the heart too.
I do. I wrote $6.5 million in grants through government funding that were funded, but I saw that they came with such strings that it became totally ineffective for serving the victims. So I've not done that now after I saw how that goes wrong. And I get my limited, and it needs to be better, funding from training and public speaking. So I travel around the United States and train groups, whether it's religious groups, private investigator groups. I just got back from Kansas as a guest of the Attorney General's office in Kansas. I am there if there's a group of people that needs to learn about trafficking, about what the victims go through, the laws, about how to effectively recognize and protect victims and effectively recognize traffickers and disrupt their activities. I've actually been an informant for the FBI, and many things like that where I've literally, as Betty said, been in the trenches, and I do my best to bring the trenches to the people that need to know about them. And the Moore Magazine was great to do that as well. So I do a lot of film and media, and basically I try to be very creative of how to pay for what I do. But most often I don't get paid, and my motto is, if you're a victim, I will help you for free. Everybody else, you need to chip in.
That's true. Can you give your contact information, Dottie? So I'm going to encourage all those institutions, nonprofits, whatever monies you have, you need to hire both of these women to come and enlighten you, please. So, you know, I want you to be able to offer that information, and you know, I hope you just don't get bombarded with requests with respect to help and no compensation, because that's not what it's about. We're all overwhelmed with what we do, but there needs to be a level playing field here, Dottie. So can you share that information, and Betty too, if people want it, we'll get in contact with you.
My website is Laster, like my name, Laster,
yep.
Global, GLOBAL.com.
Yes.
And my phone number and email and everything is at lasterglobal.com. And I would love to collaborate with any group that would like to make their community safe for victims and hostile to human traffickers.
Yes.
I'd be happy to, too. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
they can contact me. Okay, they can contact me at email, bhoubion@yahoo.com.
Yeah. Okay.
And I'd just like to say, Betty and I collaborated on a case recently helping a victim, and it was up and down for probably a month, and I got a phone call late last night, and I wanted Betty to know that she's extremely ecstatic and thanks us both so much.
Oh,
really?
Thank you. Wow.
See,
that's
ladies
the reward
and gentlemen,
right there.
That's what it's about. This is across the nation, people are collaborating that you know, do similar work to help victims, and you know, I just want to say I would love to have you back on, maybe, you know, after the first of the year, you know, maybe like March or so. I'm booking shows for February now, and we can talk about some other aspects or some updates to things. Would you both be amenable to that?
Well, that's fine with me.
Absolutely.
Yes, well, we want to see all of these presentations on Imagine Publicity website for Dottie and all the good works that Betty are doing in South Carolina.
Thank you.
And I will keep in contact with all of you, and I thank you so much. And in the meantime, I just want to mention something in closing. Again, people, please do continue to visit the websites for Susan Murphy Milano. We, although she may not be with us very much longer, she's still in our hearts and our prayers, and we do need donations of every type to help with her expenses. Please do tune in next week to Shattered Lives, because we promise to have another very exciting show with some stellar guests, and we will be having a blog and a podcast available on my website, www.donnagore.com, and Imagine Publicity, about 24 hours or so, and we'll be publicizing that. And so in the meantime, when it comes to victims, don't just try, make things happen. So thank you again, Betty. Thank you, Dottie. Thank you to my national audience. Good night, everyone. Love to
you,
Donna. Love to Susan. And yes, good night. And we will see you next week. Good night.
Good night. Thank you.